Welcome to this brand new episode of the Marketing Technology Podcast. This podcast is hosted by Mark van Horik and myself, Elias Krum. We're both from Marketing Guys in the Netherlands.
Well, hello everybody. We're back at a new episode of the Marketing Technology Podcast. Today it will just be me. Elias is unfortunately not available, but he will be definitely back at the next episode. Today I welcome Lucas Hensch from Pathmonk. And Lucas, well, take it away. Give me a little bit of background, who Lucas is and Pathmonk, and tell me, what have you got to tell our our listeners?
Very cool. Yeah, sure. So, hey guys, I'm Lucas. I am a UX and conversion optimization, I would say, nerd and specialist. So I've spent my recent years in my career in several UX design roles, and was also part of Google's mobile optimization team, which means I was spending time with Google's biggest clients, primarily in the UK, and optimized their mobile web pages in regards to page speed optimization, in regards to mobile design optimization techniques, and all with the primary goal to increase conversions, obviously, to improve the conversion rate. This topic just has always fascinated myself. Basically, after this experience, building up conversions with Google's biggest clients on mobile, because obviously mobile becoming more and more important in order to, you know, more traffic coming on mobile, but conversion rates lag behind on mobile in many cases to be as good as on desktop. So this topic has always been fascinating for me, and I continued working on a technology with our team at Pathmonk to make sure that websites on desktop and on mobile make the most of the traffic that they're getting. I'm sure we're going to get into this into our conversation today, but ultimately we're looking into improving the conversion rate on the websites of Pathmonk's clients by around 40% with the technology that we're implementing there.
Well, 40%, that's an impressive amount. Lucas, just one question. We were talking about mobile, and I'm very curious. Is there, in your opinion, regarding conversions, a big difference between desktop and mobile? Is it two different worlds, or is it similar?
So in terms of all the numbers that I've seen in my career and all the reports that are out there, obviously, they clearly point to the fact that on desktop, conversion rates would be higher than on mobile. And there's obviously a lot of reasons for this. I think one of the things that is really key is, next to, you know, all the trust elements that have been around for ages, probably. But I think one key is also the usage behavior on mobile. And on mobile, what we called in our Google team the mobile moments, micro moments, we see, you know, people using the mobile phone, 150 times per day, jumping in and out, having very short instances of usage, where they go in, check, you know, a little bit and jump out again, maybe just based on the context that they're in right now, maybe they're in the bus checking it and then out again. So I think mobile definitely has that challenge, that there is the usage in itself is not, you know, a long-standing usage. You're not sitting in front of a desktop and working. You're like pulling out the phone, going in and out. So that's one challenge. And then all the other challenges that come along with just the device by itself. And this is where page speed, you know, comes into play. People are on sometimes unstable connections. They're not in their office necessarily if they're using it on mobile. And all of this obviously leads adds into how quick and how fast a page can be actually showing on the screen. And all of these elements affect obviously the conversion rate. So I would say it's, in a sense, it's two different worlds. Obviously you want to convey the same message with the same, you know, value proposition, but you have to, especially on mobile, keep a lot of parameters into consideration that maybe don't have such a strong impact on desktop.
And is it also, are we too much focused on the desktop and consider the mobile as like an alternative, a different way of regarding the desktop? Shouldn't we have a complete different view when it comes to mobile?
I think it's an interesting question. I mean, ultimately, obviously, it comes down to prioritization, right? In my time at Google, where we were optimizing mobile pages, obviously, there is a lot of other priorities happening at the same time, and the mobile web page does not always win that first spot to optimize. I would argue, though, if you look at the traffic of your website and if you can identify that there is a significant chunk of mobile users coming to your page, which I'm seeing more and more, Pathmos clients to a large degree would have 60, 70% of visitors on or sessions on mobile. So on whether you would have to create a unique experience, I think I wouldn't necessarily argue for this, but I think you definitely have to prioritize to at least bring the experience up to par, right? To be able to it loading quickly, to be able that people, you know, can get your value proposition immediately, that your call to action button is not hidden below the fold, all these sort of core base elements, I think at least they should be ensured, especially given that more and more traffic is coming on mobile. I think the traffic has on mobile versus on desktop has been surpassed the desktop traffic quite a while ago. And so I think it would be important for every product team, every e-commerce team to take a very, very careful look at what is happening on the actual mobile pages.
Okay, so let's go into this scenario. I've noticed that for my company, and I'm responsible for the desktop and the mobile, that mobile it has indeed surpassed. My visitors are much more using the mobile to consume our content and to visit our website. So what kind of tips can you give me as being confronted with this situation? What should I do? What kind of focus, what kind of priorities should I lean to now?
I think that's a really, really good question. I think there is, number one, I think it's important to keep in mind that there's a lot of data showing that people, you know, do not want to wait for pages to load for a long time on mobile. And, you know, there's metrics around like 53% of all consumers will leave a site if it takes longer than 3 seconds to load. So this idea of a 3 second is a pretty good benchmark. So what then becomes really important is to take into consideration that there is a correlation between page speed and conversion rate optimization. This correlation obviously changes in its drastic, in its impact, depending on the different pages. But if you are responsible for the website and you figured out, okay, our conversions are lower on mobile, the first thing that I would obviously do is review the site on mobile from many different devices, not in your office, go somewhere where your connection might not be as stable, just to get that first initial experience, right? Let's say we pass that step and you only realize, okay, the page is loading much slower. And you can actually also emulate that if you go to tools like webpagetest.org, which is actually built by a Googler internally, not an official Google tool, but built by a Googler internally. And it will show you how your page is loading on 3G fast, 4G, 5G, because always keeping in mind that not everybody is on the latest device. Not everybody is on the best connection. And if you then sort of see, you know, maybe on a 3G fast or 4G, your page is blank for the first 6, 7, 8, maybe 10 seconds. I think that's something that can be tackled with relatively lightweight techniques. We can go into some of them just to give you an idea. But it wouldn't always have to be, you know, focusing on my server. Like, do we have to change the infrastructure to improve that page load? Basically, what I can share from my time in Google is a different way of thinking about page speed that does not necessarily require huge development tasks, because as we experience day in and day out, and development tasks are piling up, prioritizing mobile optimization is not always the easiest thing. So I'm happy to share a couple of frameworks of how you can think about this to get your page faster without having to do huge development work.
Well, of course, we would like to hear that. I can imagine that if you in a desktop first thinking, you want to have your website that looks great. You've got visuals, you've got images, maybe you even got video, and your tendency might be that the mobile version is just, it's the mobile version of that great visual looking desktop. But if that boils down your page speed very much, I wouldn't it be a best idea to let that go, that and really look at the mobile version as a speedy version instead of a mini version of the desktop that looks visually very great? What are your ideas? And please, by all means, give us some tips on how to make the mobile version a great experience for mobile users.
Sure. So I think the first thing to keep in mind is, and I agree with you wholeheartedly, that you have to make, you have a speed budget basically on your website, right? Every element that you place on your website, might it be images, might it be JavaScript to load any tags or to load any functionality on the website or even some animations, each of this is contributing to your speed budget, right? And if you're sort of crossing over the line of your budget, your page is going to be coming slower. And I want to make this a little bit more clear. Ultimately, the browser, if the browser is trying to show your website on the screen of the mobile device of the user, what it has to do, it has to run along the critical rendering path. And the critical rendering path is basically the steps the browser has to do in order to be able to even show anything on the screen, right? To change from a blank screen to something where your icons, your headlines, your images appear. And there is elements that the page has to download and execute, primarily HTML files, CSS files, JavaScript files, that by default block the rendering path. Which means if you're loading a lot of JavaScript tags, if you're having maybe an A/B testing tool that you maybe not using currently anymore because you don't have any tests running, this JavaScript will directly impact your page speed, not because your servers are slow, but because the JavaScript and the CSS are render blocking. So I think a couple of things is to really think about your page in the actual steps that it's loading, right? It's loading the HTML first, then it's loading, you know, CSS files, JavaScript files, and seeing, okay, are we loading, for example, JavaScript that is required in the checkout of my page, which a user is not going to be using within the first couple of seconds, right? Because they have to, you know, go first, pick an item, put it into the checkout, and then this JavaScript is being required. So what you could be doing as one example is to load this type of JavaScript functions asynchronously, or you can call them, you so-called defer them, which means you load them after the page has been loading. So that means you step-by-step taking elements out of this critical rendering path to make sure that your screen is not blanking for a long time. And there is sort of a different technique for each of the files that could be coming into the way of the browser, right? For example, if you're thinking about CSS, maybe one thing to keep in mind, though, is because I think it's something I didn't mention yet, there's tons of metrics on how you could be measuring your page speed, right? It could be the load time. It could be the first time to byte. It could be the time for the first byte. It could be start of the rendering. It could be the full load of the page. What we've been taking as the main metrics within Google and our team there was the speed index. And the speed index is basically a metric that you can get from webpagetest.org as well when you run the test on your URL. But it basically says, how long does it take until this first screen above the fold has a meaningful paint? Meaning, how long does it take until the first screen is loaded 100%? That full screen has, you know, the icons, the logos, the button, the image. And because that really gives your website visitor a meaningful impression on your page, because you can see the value proposition, you can see the image, you can see the call to action. And that speed index is really one thing that we optimized for in our team, because ultimately page speed is about giving information as quick as possible to the user, right? And the user can, in the very beginning, only see what's or will be only seeing what's at the first screen above the fold. So optimizing for page speed index is what we've been doing in our team. A page speed index is given by a number by milliseconds, which means if you have a page speed index of 3,000, it means your above the fold content will be loading within around 3 seconds. And that what it's all about to optimize for. Like I said before, this idea of, you know, which files are impacting this speed index are the ones that are render blocking, CSS, where you could be using only the critical CSS, only the ones that is required for this particular first paint of the screen, and then load the other ones after. Or you could be, as I mentioned before, take certain JavaScript tags or functions or files and load them later because they're not being required in that first fold. And it continues like this, right? There's for every element, your font files. You know, I've seen on most websites, there is two or three icons maybe at the on the first screen, you know, usually maybe a search icon or a shopping bag icon. But what happens is most of the teams load the full icon pack, right? With like 500 icons, right? Which means now this file is much bigger. It has to be loading at the very beginning, and it takes much longer than to get to that point where this one icon that we want is actually ready. So it's really about thinking each of the elements that make the page, if there is a way to optimize. If you think about fonts, similar story, right? There's different font formats. You can go from the old font format files to the newer of two files, which usually makes the font file around 30% smaller. And that's just a simple transformation from one format to the other. It makes it 30% smaller. But also you could be thinking one step further and saying, okay, what are the font files that are being used across the internet the most? And that's by default Roboto, at least from the Google fonts. I'm talking about Google fonts right now. Roboto, Open Sans, they basically cover the vast majority of the websites. And what that means is just a small little thing. It means that the user that is coming to your page already has that font file cached. So they don't even have to load it from you, right? Which means your web font will be appearing a little bit quicker. It will be appearing a little bit quicker to the user that your site is ready, especially if you're using any of those. I think there's I have heard about a rate that's, I think, around 60-70% of cross-site caching rates. So which means, like, in most cases, somebody was already on the page. If you use that famous font, somebody has already been on another page that has this particular font and therefore already loaded. And there is more and more tricks like that. You can think about the hero image. Hero image usually is an image that is being loaded, and I've seen very often that this first image that is so crucial to the first load loads somewhere between all the other images of the page, right? So position 30, position 50, sometimes position 80. But what you could be doing is just take that first image. And now think, okay, how can we get that as quick as possible on the screen to make sure our page is loading or is perceived as being loading in the speed index really quick? And one thing that would be to take that image, there's a mechanism that's called Base64 encoding. So you take that image, you transform that into sort of a string of code, basically. You take that string of code and you put that string of code into your HTML file, which is by default the first file that is going to be downloaded.
Mm-hmm.
Which means your hero image, out of a sudden, appears with the first request on the page, rather than, you know, on position 28, 30, or whatever it is where your picture appears. So the core concept that I'm trying to convey is it's not always sort of trying to point to the big items, the servers, but it's really to look at each individual file that is part of what makes the page, what makes the above-the-fold content, and see, are we using it in an optimized manner, or is there something that we can do? And I think we spoke now about images, we spoke about fonts, we spoke about icons, and that we spoke about CSS and JavaScript, and that primarily makes a website, right? So that's the way I would be thinking about that.
Well, it sounds really much like very often you've got this 20-80 rule that 20, it's 20% that matters, and you got all the 80% left. It appears that you have to identify what are the elements, or what is that 20% that makes a good first impression of your website.
Yep.
And as soon as you know what that is, concentrate and focus on that. Sounds very great, but how? And I'm that guy that has to do this now. And where do I start? By I understand that there is a load of stuff, and not all that stuff needs to be loaded at the beginning. Mm-hmm. I only have the most important part, that 20%. Well, what kind of tool will help me with that, and how can I make this split, or without being a super tech web developer?
Yep, no, I understand. So I think the easiest tool is, as I mentioned before, is webpagetest.org. You basically go on webpagetest.org, you plug in your URL to run a test, you choose that you want to emulate a mobile browser, and you can even choose if it should be 3G, 4G, or 5G. You run the test, and what you then get is what is called a film strip view, right? And you can really see which files are loaded at which point in time. So it's kind of a super slowdown, image by image, of what is being shown after which file is being loaded. So you can then very quickly see, okay, we are blanking the screen, it's blank for the first 5 seconds. And then you will see, okay, this is where all of these 10 JavaScript files have finished loaded. So let's look at that 10 JavaScript files. Is any of them not relevant at the very beginning? Can they be deferred, or can they be loaded asynchronously? That would be one step. And then you will maybe see that, okay, the page is blank and now the fonts are appearing, but the icons are not there. And then we type into what we just said before, you know, maybe you're loading too many icons. So you will be able to basically walk step by step through what is showing on your page and what files have been loaded at this point in time. And then I think the key, you mentioned the 20/80 rule. I think in most cases, or in many cases, if you want to sort of, you know, have that immediate idea or the immediate feel of a page improvement, is to be looking at these key hero images. And for example, not going anywhere near something like a carousel where you have, you know, a couple of images floating or sort of switching on the page, because the reason there is you're using JavaScript to actually have that effect. You have tons of pictures to load, and all of this is slowing down the page load while not a lot of people would be interacting with, you know, maybe that image 3, 4, 5 in your carousel. So I would say it's really to working step by step, and it's really very, very visual. If you use webpagetest.org, it's very visual. You will see what has been loaded on the page, which files are ready by now, and is there something within that files that it was maybe we could be trying to improve?
Okay, so that's the analysis part. So you can see what is necessary and what's blocking. You know what to change to get rid of the dreaded blank 5 seconds. Mm-hmm. But how can I rearrange this process?
Okay, and that is really depending on what type of file we're looking at. So now we're going a little bit more into depth, right? If you identify that JavaScript files, for example, that are not needed are responsible for this, or any tags from an old tool that you're not using anymore, or maybe the second chat that you've been trying and tag is still in the page. Obviously, number one, cleaning up that one would be important. But then, okay, how do you change that order right now? There are several techniques in that for JavaScript. A very simple one is to, and that's probably where you would have to then talk with your developers. But what they can be adding is they can add an async or a deferred tag to that JavaScript file. So you pick a file and you add a tag to that says async, which means it's going to be only loading after this page has been rendered. So it's kind of like you're giving it a tag to say, hey, you JavaScript file, you load a little bit later once the other stuff is ready, which means it's not going to impact the critical rendering path anymore. If you think about pictures, then the approach would be slightly different because with pictures, it works like this. There's something called lazy loading, right? Because you load maybe 10 pictures and you want to only show that one hero image where we discussed already. We tried to put that into the HTML. So this is how you change the sequence of loading there. And then for the other pictures that are maybe way, way below the fold, you would apply what's called lazy loading. There is a couple of nice libraries that the developers can be using for that. And basically, it means the pictures will only be requested once a user is close to be seeing that picture on the screen. So you can imagine somebody scrolling down and the pictures that is, let's say, slightly below that on the screen will now just be loaded once the user is starting to approach that image. So what I'm trying to say is there's different techniques for the different types of files. So there's not one way to just rearrange the order. You can go into prefetching of some elements. So it's a combination. It's really like a little bit of an art to put that together.
Yeah, I can imagine that. It's really like just get the stuff when it's needed, like in a sort of just-in-time process, and not just trying to scramble everything that it's needed, what's on the page, but just get it in the moment when it's needed.
Especially for that first paint, because what is it's always a trade-off, right? If that first paint is blank, if your first screen is blank for a long time, you're going to be guaranteed to lose a lot of people because, I mean, how long are we willing to wait for a wide screen? The data shows not very long. So then you are in that trade-off situation, like, do I want to really have everything there but nobody is seeing it? Or do I maybe show a more sort of minimal version? And I'm not trying to say it looks less quality. It's more like the actual files below that are optimized to show the minimum version. And then, you know, other elements load fast later or the images load with the interaction on the screen. So I would say working with your developers is key. So just from a marketeer perspective to implement all of this is probably a bit of an ask. But I think what is important is to be able to, you know, go to the development team and say, hey, we know this is our load times. So we want to optimize this. Here is maybe we've spotted already two or three things that take super long to load in web page tested, or how can we as a team fix that?
Yeah, well, you can give as a marketer, you can give the priority to the developers and say, well, this is the whole page, but this is the most important. I want to have this within a few seconds that my visitors will see this and not the rest. Yep. And I can imagine, as you said, if it's a blank screen and that takes 5 seconds and the average mobile user decides within 3 seconds to stay or not, you will lose a lot of visitors, and therefore that will hurt your conversion. So by doing this, you are improving your conversion.
Exactly. I mean, that's the whole reason why our team within Google actually was there, right? To be able to support teams to look into that, because it's one thing to increase ad spend on mobile, but then it's another thing to have the website ready for this. And obviously Google has been pushing out a lot of technologies like AMP pages that load or accelerated mobile pages that load really quickly. So there's a lot of stuff even beyond what we've just been discussing, but just that simple, very simple approach of trying to see, is there some elements, some files, some pictures that harming our load drastically without no apparent real value, I think is the very first step to start.
Yeah, I consider this as a great quick win to improve your conversion. I've looked at your website, PathMonk, and you're very much specialized in that optimization process. Can you tell a little bit more about PathMonk? Because we've had it now of the optimization of the mobile, but there are a lot of huge ways to optimize other things to improve your conversions.
Sure. Yeah. So I have to agree with you fully that page speed, what we've been discussing now, is only one element of conversion rate optimization, right? And then some pages has had a strong impact and other pages had a smaller impact on conversion rate. So I think there's much, much more to conversion rate optimization, right? And one thing that a lot of people focus on is obviously the website optimization in itself, right? The buttons, the images, the headlines. That's what a lot of people are focusing on and spending time, resources, money on, you know, a lot of A-B testing, right? So I would say that's in many, many cases the status quo if you want to improve your conversion rate. We at PathMonk started a little bit from a different angle because we started looking at the actual behavior that a person is doing on the page and how that affects the conversion rate. Let me give you an example first on how that looks like in the real world, and I can jump into the technology. So if we compare a website to just a normal retail shop, right, you would have, you know, a person stepping into the shop, kind of like a person opening a website. Now the retail shop has optimized where, or is trying to do at least, to optimize where each of the items are in the rack, which rack is at the very front of the shop, which is in the back. Supermarkets obviously are getting really sophisticated with that. So that's what a lot of people do to their website. But in the retail shop, you, in many, many cases, you would also have a shop assistant, right? Somebody that is observing what you're doing, that sort of starts to figure out, okay, this is X and customer type XY, and will approach you at some point in time with some information that is relevant for the product, right? Such as maybe telling you a story about how another customer very similar has been using this, or just helping you to decide. Mm-hmm. And that element we found at PathMonk is missing currently in the digital arena, right? There is obviously, the first thought would be, okay, there's chatbots, there's chat widgets that would take that role. But if you think that one step further, a chatbot really just takes the place, if you bring that back to the store example, really just takes the place of an individual that would be sitting behind an information desk and waiting until each of the customers go to them and ask a question.
Yes, right? Indeed.
Which not a lot of people would be necessarily doing, because they're busy searching for the stuff, but they still might just have some questions in the background. And this is the point where we started off, because we saw that with a lot of chatbots that are being implemented in the website, the actual conversion rate, so the actual uplift in sales, was not that high. And again, I can sort of compare to that situation in the store. How often do you just like walk proactively to somebody who is trying to sell you but is waiting behind an information stand and not doing anything but answering your question, right? So in many, many cases, this interaction will not even happen, because most people will not do the effort to just go and ask a question if they don't have a burning question, obviously.
Yeah.
So this is where we start off building PathMonk. So to basically build a technology that we call smart cards. And those smart cards understand in real time first what each of the individual visitors is doing on the page. You know, did they just come the first time, the second time, or is it the 10th time? Did they defocus the page and just refocus the page? Did they just scroll down a couple of times so they're in the middle of reading? So smart cards understand all of this, and they understand your products. They know frequently asked questions. They know testimonials about their products or case studies, and basically merge these two information, the user journey and the information about the product. And we slide in sort of cards, you could say, that look and feel very much like the website, slide in with information that the system then learns which information would have to be showing at which point in time in the journey to maximize the conversions. So it's an artificial intelligence sitting below that learns, okay, I've been learning now that if a visitor is coming on the first time, and if they've been scrolling for around 40, 60 seconds, and if they've been doing action X and Y, now it would be a good time to show them a testimonial card from where the next step would be a conversion element, such as, you know, collecting contact information or setting up a call if you're offering a demo to book, for example. So that's basically what we do in PathMonk, trying to bring that conversion rate optimization one step further and really learning based on the behavior what information enhances conversions.
Oh, that sounds very interesting. So you actually, based on the behavior that previous visitors had done, you bring what they need. You bring them to them.
Exactly. We bring Exactly. If you bring that back to the shopping environment, you would be sort of, it's a quiet shop assistant working next to you. And if it realizes it looks like you're having a question, or you have been now looking at the same time at the same item a couple of times, it maybe gives you a small card with information about that that might enhance your decision making, such as social proof or frequently asked information, frequently asked questions, facts and benefits about the product.
Oh, that's very cool, Lucas. That's very cool. Lucas, I think we've covered quite a lot of elements on the optimization part. We focused on mobile, because that's it's a device that's becoming more and more popular, but requires even more stringent conditions to get the stuff as fast as possible on your screen. Otherwise, your visitor is gone. Mm-hmm. You gave there a very handful tips. We spoke about the page speed part. And at the end, you gave us a great insight of the cool, proactive way of helping your customers on your website by providing them the information that based on artificial intelligence, and that they get the information that they most likely need at that moment, instead of require them to do the step and find the guy or girl at the information stand.
Yep.
I think it was a very insightful interview and podcast. Lucas, is there anything else that you would like to give as a last remark for this podcast?
Yeah, so if anything of this sounds interesting to your team, if you're trying to get more leads from your website, you've been, maybe spending a bit on ads and now looking into increasing conversion rate, maybe you can check out pathmonk.com. Have a look. It's PATHMONK, pathmonk.com. Check it out. You can watch a demo there. And then if you want to get a personal demo, that is possible to book. And if you got any questions, obviously, you can reach out through there as well. To see if our team can be supportive in your endeavors to increase conversions.
And for all the listeners who are driving in your car, please don't write this down now. We will put everything in our show notes. Lucas, thank you very much for all the insights that you've given us. It was great having this talk with you, and speak to you soon.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Marketing Technology Podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe to our iTunes channel. Also, if you want to be interviewed on this podcast, or if you have any questions on marketing technology, send me an email on e.crum@marketingguys.nl. Thank you.